This is Wednesday, July 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, President Obama makes some changes about U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. You'll hear what's been decided. Also ahead, the British revisit their involvement in the Iraq War. The findings are not positive. And the latest on the recommendation not to indict Hillary Clinton for her private emails. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama has announced plans to maintain about 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan into next year. The original plan by the administration was to reduce the number of U.S. troops from the current 9,800 to around 5,500 by the end of this year. But Obama said today that the security situation in Afghanistan remains precarious, and so he's leaving more troops than originally planned through the end of his administration.
We've been able to end our major ground war there and bring 90% of our troops back home. But even as we work for peace, we have to deal with the realities of the world as it is. And we can't forget what's at stake in Afghanistan. This is where Al-Qaeda is trying to regroup. This is where ISIL continues to try to expand its presence. If these terrorists succeed in regaining areas and camps where they can train and plot, they will attempt more attacks against us. We cannot allow that to happen. I will not allow that to happen.
The president said he will press for more coalition support in Afghanistan during a NATO summit in Warsaw, Poland later this week, and he had a message for the Taliban.
My decision today also sends a message to the Taliban and all those who have opposed Afghanistan's progress. You have now been waging war against the Afghan people for many years. You've been unable to prevail. Afghan security forces continue to grow stronger. And the commitment of the international community, including the United States, to Afghanistan and its people, will endure. I will say it again. The only way to end this conflict and to achieve a full drawdown of foreign forces from Afghanistan is through a lasting political settlement between the Afghan government and the Taliban. That's the only way. And that is why the United States will continue to strongly support an Afghan-led reconciliation process.
The president said leaving more troops in Afghanistan when he leaves office will also give the next U.S. president more flexibility to make decisions about how to best move forward on the long-running conflict. Joining us now is VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas. How difficult is this situation, Mary Alice, in Afghanistan and all through that part of the world for the president to have had to come to this decision?
Well, it wasn't an easy one. As you know, he ran, even as a senator, running for the White House, promising to end these wars. And here he is, really in the final months of his presidency, saying, well, I was going to draw down the number of troops to 5,500, but we're going to go and leave them at 8,400. That's because it's a mess. The security situation is worsening. The Taliban is surging back. We have Islamic State trying to really set a foothold there, finding it so unstable that it is a good place for, as you know, Islamic State to move to, try to set up another, you know, home base. And then you have Al-Qaeda elements that are still there and still continuing to cause problems, and that's a key priority for America. It really is a very difficult situation, and again, he's going to go to NATO later this week and try to get commitments from coalition partners, and he just has a few months left in office. So it's not good.
As you heard, he has asked the Taliban to come to the negotiating table. What's the latest status on that?
Well, really, no real progress has been made on that. There is also tremendous dissatisfaction with the new leadership in some of the latest polls among Afghanis and their new, you know, president and their chief executive. And so no real reform or major progress has been made in that area. And so this is just another one of the elements that the next president will have to deal with. Its security situation, It's a lack of political reform. It is still a notoriously corrupt government. You have refugees problems there. You have infrastructure problems that continue. The economy is just in a shambles. That's why there's a lot of criticism here. And the president has said, I continue to tweak my approach toward Afghanistan based on what my team, military and intelligence team, tells me. But it's you can't argue that it's a resounding success, although the administration does say progress has been made.
Mary Alice Salinas is VOA's White House correspondent. Mary Alice, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Ira, anytime.
Now we move from Afghanistan and the announcement about that to an announcement about the Iraq War. The head of an inquiry into Britain's role in the Iraq War said Wednesday that the conflict was an intervention that went badly wrong with consequences to this day. Former civil servant John Chilcott spoke as his panel released a long-awaited report that drew on several years of public hearings and analysis of 150,000 documents. They were trying to answer whether the U.S.-led invasion was necessary and whether the unrest that followed should have been anticipated.
The questions for the inquiry were whether it was right and necessary to invade Iraq in March 2003 and whether the UK could and should have been better prepared for what followed. We have concluded that the UK chose to join the invasion of Iraq before the peaceful options for disarmament had been exhausted. Military action at that time was not a last resort. We have also concluded that the judgments about the severity of the threat posed by Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, WMD, were presented with a certainty that was not justified. Despite explicit warnings, the consequences of the invasion were underestimated. The planning and preparations for Iraq after Saddam Hussein were wholly inadequate. The government failed to achieve its stated objectives.
Well, as he just said there, much of the criticism fell on the British leader at the time. The government, Tony Blair, was the leader, who the report says had been warned that military action would increase the threat that Britain faced from al-Qaeda. Blair, on his part, rejected accusations that he acted dishonestly in making the case for a war that killed 179 British troops. However, he did accept much of the blame placed upon him.
The decision to go to war in Iraq and to remove Saddam Hussein from power in a coalition of over 40 countries led by the United States of America was the hardest, most momentous, most agonizing decision I took in my 10 years as British Prime Minister. For that decision today, I accept full responsibility. Without exception and without excuse. I recognize the division felt by many in our country over the war, and in particular, I feel deeply and sincerely, in a way that no words can properly convey, the grief and suffering of those who lost ones they loved in Iraq. Whether members of our armed forces, the armed forces of other nations, or Iraqis.
Joining us now from London is Henry Ridgewell, reporting for VOA from London. Henry, what's been the reaction to the report so far?
Well, there was speculation before the report that really the conclusions might go a bit easier on Tony Blair than they have done, that there was some concern among those very opposed to the Iraq war that it would be something of a whitewash. And I think the reaction here is the opposite. The conclusions of the report, as you've heard there in that clip from its author, Sir John Chilcott, have been quite damning of the political leadership in 2003, and Tony Blair in particular. And the way that he presented the evidence that was available to him at the time about Saddam Hussein's possession of weapons of mass destruction, about his preparedness for the aftermath, and also the way in which he sought legal approval for the war here in Britain. So an all-round, very critical approach to the conclusions, to the approach taken by the British government at the time. It should be stated that this inquiry has no legal weight, so it won't lead to prosecutions, but it does heap more pressure on those who took that very grave decision in 2003 to join the invasion of Iraq.
Doesn't reflect very well on the U.S. administration at the time either, does it?
It doesn't. I think on both leaderships, President George W. Bush and Prime Minister Blair, there's been particular focus on these private memos that have now been declassified as part of the report between the two leaders, one of which in July 2002, so a full 8 months before the invasion was launched, in which Tony Blair says to President Bush that he will be with him whatever. That's the opening line of one of the memos. That suggesting to Tony Blair's critics that he had already made the decision to join George W. Bush in the invasion of Iraq, whatever happened in those 8 months leading up to the invasion. So all of that presentation of the evidence, you may remember at the UN Security Council with Colin Powell, and here in Britain with Tony Blair presenting to the Parliament the evidence from security services that Saddam Hussein possessed these chemical and biological weapons, that all of that was really just a show, and both of them had planned to invade Iraq all along. John Chilcott, the author of the report, doesn't reach that conclusion. He stops short of suggesting that it was premeditated, but I think it's pretty clear to conclude that he does think Britain and America rushed into war well before other measures like sanctions and containment had been exhausted.
Henry Ridgewell reporting for VOA from London. As always, Henry, thanks so much for being with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Good to be with you.
We continue now about reaction not only to these stories, but another story that's really trending in the United States. Andrew Palcheski, our International Edition social media editor, which I guess that's his real title. That's what he has on his door.
If only I had a door. We don't have doors.
Yeah. No. It's an open door policy here. Yeah. However, this is a very serious case. This is the latest in a series of videos that have been released online of somebody getting beaten up by a police officer, and it's causing a lot of reaction.
Absolutely. The man's name is Alton Sterling, and this is out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Alton Sterling was 37 years old, was selling CDs outside of a convenience store. Someone called the police and said he had a gun. Police officers came, and they tased him, and they shot him in the back while he was being detained and killing him. And this is something that has kind of not just developed on social media, but started out with social media because someone was there taking a cell phone video of Alton Sterling being shot and killed by the police. They put that video up on social media where it's gone viral now. So we're seeing this, the origin of this story come from social media. We're seeing it develop now as the voices chime in to talk about this killing. It's another case of an unarmed African-American being shot by police. So there's a lot of people online speaking out about that. The government, the federal government, said that the Department of Justice is going to investigate this. But there's a lot of back and forth on how this might proceed, what this might mean, if we might see another case like we did 2 years ago when Michael Brown, the young African-American man, was shot and killed in Ferguson, Missouri, protests that developed out of that, if there'll be protests in Baton Rouge. And there's also really heart-wrenching video that's come out of a press conference given by Alton Sterling's wife and his son just breaks down and just collapses in hysterics over the death of his father. So a lot of people sharing that video as well. But this is a top trending hashtag, not just in the U.S., but around the world as people are learning about Alton Sterling's story. And they're going to see if, what comes of this.
And you and I have had the discussion off the air about how social media, especially in cases like this, have changed the entire social landscape of the world, for that matter.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that we're able to see this video of him being shot and killed by police is because everybody now has a cell phone, a smartphone. Everybody has access to Facebook Live and Periscope and live streaming and the ability to post video to social media. So that really is a kind of a catalyst that's driving a lot of these stories forward. And then we're seeing the conversation continue with the hashtags. We're seeing hashtag Alton Sterling, but also people kind of countering that with the hashtag All Lives Matter. Now, that's been something, as the hashtag Black Lives Matter has trended, people have come back and said, well, All Lives Matter or Policemen's Lives Matter. So it does start this debate back and forth on social media that sometimes becomes very heated.
Andrew Palshevsky, International Edition's social media guru. People get in touch with you, how?
They can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
Andrew Palshevsky with us. This is International Edition. Among the top stories, President Obama announces plans to maintain about a thousand more U.S. troops than planned in Afghanistan into next year. The invasion of Iraq 13 years ago by an American and British-led coalition was unnecessary, according to a long-awaited official report into Britain's involvement in the Iraq War. South African Paralympian Oscar Pistorius is sentenced to 6 years in jail for murdering his girlfriend 3 years ago. And angry Republicans in the House of Representatives are set to grill the FBI director over his decision not to recommend criminal charges against presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Scientists at NASA and the University of California, Irvine, are predicting that the El Niño that took place during late 2015 into early 2016 will produce an intense fire season for the Amazon region of South America. This weather phenomenon caused a change in the rainfall pattern for many parts of the world over the past year. For the Amazon region, the scientists say that the recent El Niño cut back the amount of rain that fell during its wet season, which can last from November until May. According to NASA satellite data, the decreased rainfall left this huge area of South America drier at the start of its 2016 dry season, which lasts from July through September, than any year since 2002. Jim Randerson, a professor at the University of California, Irvine, says an important challenge right now is to come up with ways to use what they've learned to help limit damages in coming months. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition. Angry Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives are set to grill FBI Director James Comey tomorrow over his decision not to recommend criminal charges against presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton over her use of a private email server for government business while she served as Secretary of State. Jeffrey Skelling, associate editor of the Sabato Crystal Ball website at the University of Virginia Center for Politics, told VOA's Victor Beatty the FBI decision is a mixed blessing for Hillary Clinton.
This threat to Clinton, the greatest existential threat to her candidacy, has been removed in the sense that there's now nothing holding her back from being the Democratic nominee. You know, there's no expectation that the Justice Department will pursue charges against her. But on the other hand, there's no question that FBI Director James Comey's remarks were pretty good material for Republicans to use to attack her during the general election campaign. I mean, I would be stunned to see the extremely careless line clip being played over and over and over again between now and November. It was good for Clinton in the sense that it sort of moved to the next phase of the election cycle, got beyond this potential problem for her. But at the same time, it's not going anywhere. It's going to remain an election issue.
To the average voter and to observers inside and outside the country, is there a sense that, as Donald Trump would say, the system is rigged for those who have political connections as opposed to those who don't?
I think it's difficult to say for sure what public attitudes are. On the one hand, there's a great deal of cynicism among Americans and other people around the world and Western democracies and the like, but decreasing faith in institutions. So this probably plays into that to some extent, institutions also including the leaders of said institutions. But at the same time, I also think there's something of scandal fatigue for voters because this has been in the news for so long. To some degree, it may end up being something like the Benghazi issue from just a political perspective in that it becomes a good tool for rallying one side, but has less of an effect on the overall electorate. And Democrats will dug in on the defensive and won't be, you know, particularly interested in hearing about it. And so I do think scandal fatigue damages it as a potential issue for Republicans to use.
That is Jeffrey Skilling, associate editor of the Sabato Crystal Ball website at the University of Virginia Center for Politics, talking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Well, let's check Wimbledon. That's what we've been doing for the past couple of days or so. After saving three match points in the fourth set, Roger Federer made it through to the semifinals for the 11th time at Wimbledon. The seven-time champion came back from a two-set deficit to meet Marin Cilic 6-7, 4-6, 6-3, 7-6, 6-3 on center court as he continues his run for a record eighth Wimbledon title. He's 34 years old, thus the oldest man to reach the semifinals at the All England Club since 39-year-old Ken Rosewall was runner-up in 1974. Federer will play Milos Raonic in the semifinals on Friday. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. You can like us if you like us on Facebook at VOA Now and follow us if you want to follow us on Twitter at hashtag VOA underscore IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Andreas Ivanov. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Terrorists attacked an Afghan police convoy outside the capital, Kabul, June 30th, killing at least 30 people and wounding 50 others. Two bombs hit a convoy of buses carrying police academy graduates from a ceremony on the city's western outskirts. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the murders. The bombing follows the June 19th suicide attack on a minibus in Kabul, which killed at least 14 Nepali security guards. The cadets were returning to Kabul from a training center in Wardak province and were about to go on leave. The attacks were immediately condemned by President Ashraf Ghani, who called the incident a crime against humanity. While Muslims are busy praying during this holy month of Ramadan, the Taliban keep committing reprehensible crimes by killing innocent people and spreading fear and terror, he said. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued a statement condemning the horrific multi-part attack on Afghan National Police and civilians in Kabul. The first attack targeted new police cadets, with a second attack purposefully targeting the brave people who rushed to help the victims, the statement noted, adding this cruel and complete disregard for human life during the holy month of Ramadan is abhorrent. Our thoughts and prayers are with all of those killed and injured, as well as with the victims' families, colleagues, and friends. We will continue to stand with our Afghan partners and friends as they work to bring peace and security to Afghanistan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.